This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 26. Coming up on today's show, hand-wringing collusion and pressing play. All that and more on the way here on Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hi, thanks for tuning in to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. Hopefully you downloaded it and you're driving home from work. You can find our audio weekly, about 30 to 40 minutes worth of podcast audio every week I put up. You can also find a weekly video, about 20 minutes, 10, 20 minutes, max 20. And then I blog a little bit there too at stillstandingpodcast.com. This is for people who catch me on CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and want to hear a little bit more of what I got to say. I only get a couple of minutes on those shows, even though it takes hours to prepare. And why let all that intelligence go to waste, right? What the hell? But I wanted to thank Brian Pizdursky, Daniel Markey. These guys are my executive producers. These are people who are supporting us on Patreon.com. Darcy Swenson, George Noonan, Jack Bronwich, Jerry Brown, John Seifert, Jordan Gostomsky, Patty Freeling, Samantha Lynn, Sonia Carlin, Stephen Flaminio, Susan Stevens, Thomas Fulton. Thanks a lot, Thomas. Julie, Rachel. And two new guys, Greg Mumbach and Mark Berry. I recognize those names, especially Mark Berry, my old friend from the Kemp campaign in 1988. I haven't seen Mark, gosh, since before my first marriage and after his first marriage. It's a long time ago, Mark. I hope you're doing well. Thanks for helping out at Patreon.com. These are our executive producers for Still Standing. They help us make sure I'm able to do this every week, and usually there's something going on that I've got something to talk about, you know, something to say about. This week there was a lot going on. It seems like, as I say, every week it seems. In the Trump years, every week is a big news week. It's Thursday now, and it feels like the early news this week is old news. We're standing around waiting for the Mueller report to come out, because every week is the big week for the Mueller report. This week I had calls from the media trying to book me on Thursday and Friday shows, book some clients of mine on Thursday and Friday shows to talk about the Mueller report coming out. All the news channels, all the reporters I trust say that it's on its way. Very few will say otherwise. So we're all kind of sitting around here waiting for the Mueller report. It's like waiting for Godot. This seems like it's never coming, but my wife and I and my kids were waiting to press play on our lives again after having our lives on pause for 2 years. As we participated in House, Senate, and Mueller investigation hearings into the bogus Russia collusion delusion, with the Mueller team closing down, that means the criminal part of this will be over. The stuff in the House that's still going on, that's political, purely political. We'll talk about that in the next segment, but we were watching as Paul Manafort, my old boss and my good friend who I've known for, gosh, 30 years, watched as he got sentenced last week to 47 months, just under 4 years, for what the Mueller team wanted 19 to 25 years for. And we all thought, I mean, we were just really nervous. All of Paul's friends and family were very nervous that he was going to get over-sentenced. You know, 47 months is more like it. Not all the crimes he was sentenced for last week were financial crimes, economic crimes, crimes against the tax code and banking regulations. And if you look at the sentences that other people get without the infamy of being associated with Donald Trump, 47 months is a little heavy, actually. But boy, did the reporters blow their minds. I talked about that on last week's video. I'm not going to go into it again, but boy, it was almost like Election Day all over again, these reporters wringing their hands about how, oh my God, Judge Ellis gave such a light sentence, Paul Manafort's victory somehow, as if victory is 4 years in jail, idiots. But, you know, we're waiting around for a sentencing this week in Judge Amy Berman Jackson's court. And that was, you know, Ellis was in Virginia, and he was appointed by a Republican. Amy Berman Jackson's in D.C., and, of course, appointed by a Democrat. So we've all seen her. She's handled a lot of these Mueller investigation hearings and cases, and she knows a lot about it. She knows, you know, not as much as the prosecutors, but as much as the prosecutors will tell her, and more than any you or I know, any one of us. So we were expecting her actually being a Democrat, seeing some of the things she said in the past, some of the ways she handled Paul in the past, that she was going to throw the book at him, and there was something on the lines of a possible sentence of 10 years. Those of us who thought that Paul got a 47-month sentence last week and that was fair, we were far outnumbered in the media and on, you know, in the chattering class of people who thought it was far too little. And I was concerned that Judge Jackson might stack Paul's sentence so that he got something closer to 15 years or something. But indeed, her sentence this week was 7 years, right? Almost 7 years. Some of that concurrent. So Paul can actually get out of prison with the 15%, I think, that they can take off of a federal sentence. He can get out in 2024. I know that bothers the living daylights out of the hating leftists who want Paul Manafort to die in prison for cheating on his taxes. Sick. But he won't. He's not going to. Amy Berman Jackson gave, I thought she was going to give 8 years. She gave 7, you know. She's pretty smart. I don't like the way she thinks sometimes. Some of the things she says about Paul or Roger, Roger Stone, I don't like it. But the more I listen to her, the more I watch her, the more I see she's very meticulous and very thoughtful. And while I might not agree with her, whatever she usually says or does is well-founded in the law. So there she is. And afterward, Kevin Downing, Paul Manafort's lawyer, after the hearing in the sentencing hearing in Virginia, came out and said there is no evidence of collusion, and the left went wild. Somehow that's sending a coded signal to Donald Trump that Paul Manafort needs a pardon, as if there's a need for a coded signal that Paul Manafort needs a pardon. Some kind of idiot you have to be to think that Paul Manafort's attorney needs to speak in code through your television. Fools. But, of course, T.S. Ellis, the judge, had also said that we're not dealing with Russian collusion here. It's not even being considered. And they somehow thought that Ellis, being appointed by Republicans in the past, was sending a coded message to Donald Trump to also pardon Paul Manafort. Fools. But then after the Judge Jackson sentencing hearing, of course, Kevin Downing comes outside after the hearing and says very simply, as he's being screamed at by insane leftist Trump derangement syndrome sufferers outside the courthouse, he said simply, there's no evidence of Russian collusion. And the heads on CNN and MSNBC exploded, brain matter all over the cameras everywhere. There he is sending that secret coded message again. Let's just break that down for a second. First of all, it's not secret. The entire world is watching. It's not secret, right? There was nobody, you know, agreeing upon hand signals before this happened. Coded. There's no need for a code. In fact, as a matter of fact, I believe right now Paul Manafort's gag is off. He can say whatever the hell he wants. And nobody in their right mind thinks that Donald Trump hasn't thought about a pardon. It's on every TV news channel. He doesn't need a coded message. There's a real reason why Paul Manafort's attorney said there's no evidence of Russian collusion. And the reason is, get out your pencils, because there's no evidence of Russian collusion. It's not just something he's saying out of the blue. He's saying that because the media and the leftists and the Democrats, like the Trump derangement syndrome sufferers in the House and the Senate, have been saying that Paul Manafort has been colluding with Russians. Of course Paul Manafort's attorneys are going to say he did not collude with Russians. That's an important message for Paul Manafort, who's going away to prison for a while. He wants America to know that he's not a traitor. He didn't collude with Russians. It's not a secret-coded message. To all the media, reporters, and contributors on television, all of them alike, who are wringing their hands about Judge Ellis and Paul Manafort's attorney twice, him, mentioning Russian collusion in their public statements. Those of you who say that's a coded call for a pardon, you're fake. There was no evidence of collusion. And yet the media has constantly accused Paul Manafort of this bogus crime. Well, it didn't charge Paul, his most prized defendant, with any kind of Russian collusion, related to crimes after an investigation where people close to him, close to Manafort, actually gave evidence against him. Even though he had flipped, as they say in the parlance, even though Mueller had flipped some of Paul's friends, there was no evidence of Russian collusion. Of course not. The media couldn't stop talking about it, though. Paul Manafort's giving polling data to Konstantin Kilimnik, his right-hand man for many years in Ukraine. Something was so important about this collusion case that the OSC, the Office of Special Counsel, mentioned that polling data in their public filings, and then they did nothing about it. Polling data was exchanged. Oh my God, it's so important to this case that we absolutely forgot to charge Paul with anything about it. In fact, we're never going to charge anybody anything because Paul Manafort didn't collude with Russia. Who else is going to say it? The media is going to say it? Of course it's up to Paul's attorneys to say it. And they owed it to him to do that. The Office of Special Counsel lead prosecutor Andrew Weissman last month told a federal judge that on August 2016, on or sometime during August 2016, Manafort and Kilimnik met in some kind of a endeavor that was somehow significant to the special counsel. At the heart of the investigation, he said. But where is this August 2016 meeting and the Manafort charges and the Manafort sentencing? Nowhere. Because he didn't collude with Russia. And he probably told his attorneys, please tell the country I'm not a traitor. I didn't collude with Russia. There was no Russian collusion in either Manafort sentencing hearing. Nothing in the memos, nothing in the charges, and it was really important for his attorneys to say this publicly. In light of all the filings from the OSC, all the statements from the fake news media, everything, so recent as last week, Paul Manafort committed financial crimes. But he's not a traitor, and his lawyers had to tell America, probably because he asked them, not because it was a coded message to the President of the United States, don't be an idiot. Stop with your hand-wringing. I'm sorry. I get out of sorts about this stuff because these people are nuts, man. I don't know where their heads are so far up their backsides. They can't find their way out. Well, Judge Amy Berman Jackson, of course, she also is in charge of, you know, she's the judge on my good friend Roger Stone's case. You probably know I worked with Roger as early as when I first started working with Paul. Very temporarily, I had a job at Black Manafort Stone, the lobbying outfit they founded in Washington in the 80s. I first started working with them in 1986. I've known them a long time, but I'm much closer to Roger. Roger's being charged on, what, 9 counts of process crimes? Nothing accused of, nothing about the president, just like Manafort, nothing at all. No accusations of collusion with Russia because it doesn't exist. But he had a hearing this morning with Judge Amy Berman Jackson. And everybody was rubbing their hands together, hand-wringing in the media, saying, Roger might go to jail. Now, Roger has tempted fate in the past. Of course, he's got a gag order on him. He's not allowed to do certain things, say certain things. People around him aren't allowed to say anything about his case. And he's already had it tightened up on him once because of something stupid he posted on Instagram. And the judge told him at that time, you've got 2 strikes. There is no third strike. So there were no more strikes left for him. And then it was announced that Roger's paperback version of his hardback book about the Trump campaign was coming out. And there was a new foreword in there that he had written some time ago that talked about his case. And the Mueller team made an immediate filing saying, this is Roger Stone breaking his gag order. It's kind of a push, if you ask me. But everybody in the media was like, oh, Roger's going away. And they were, all of them, they all got horny over it, especially the people over at the Mueller team, probably looking to throw anything against the wall to try to put Roger in jail. Because, well, I have my opinion on that. But of course, the judge, Amy Berman Jackson, Democrat, you know, I don't like some of the things she says. I don't like some of the way she thinks, but she is smart, this woman. And she said, I'm not going to say anything about Roger Stone's paperback. I'm a little upset about it. We can talk about that, but it's not a priority for me today. Let's schedule Roger's trial, which she did for November 5. And she said it's probably going to take 2 weeks. November 5 this year, that's right around the corner by court standards. She clearly wants to give him a speedy trial. It's a pretty complex one, too. A lot of filings for both legal teams to go through. And Roger Stone could use your help on GoFundMe. Or actually, RogerStoneLegalFund.com is where you find it. But November 5. And no, they didn't put him back in jail. What a bad week to be a Trump hater, to be someone who likes watching other people go to jail for something they did not do. What a bad week. You didn't like the sentence. It was supposed to be 25 years, and Paul Manafort got not even four, not even seven. Oh, my God. It must be terrible for you. And Roger, his trial starts in November 5, and Amy Berman Jackson didn't put him in jail. I thought she was going to give Paul 8 years. She gave him just under seven. What am I going to say about that, right? I mean, what am I going to say? I don't like it, but, you know, he committed real crimes, and I'm hoping the president will pardon him. I don't need any coded language for that. I don't talk about it much. I know the president is looking at this. That's all I want to say. The president's clemency duty is, I believe, sacrosanct, just short of holy. I don't want to advise him. I probably will at some point try and get a message across that Paul needs a pardon. I can tell you unequivocally that Paul Manafort would not be in trouble today if he did not work for Donald Trump. Let me repeat that for you. Paul Manafort would not be in trouble today if he did not work for Donald Trump. This is Paul Manafort, by the way, was being investigated by the FBI for his work in overseas in Ukraine and elsewhere. And they decided in 2016, early 2016, late 2015, not to pursue the case. And then he signed up for Donald Trump as a campaign chairman, and they reopened the case. So he would not have been prosecuted, investigated and prosecuted and jailed if it weren't for his time working for Donald Trump. So it's hard not to look at this as anything but a political prosecution. But hey, these are real crimes. So Godspeed, Paul Manafort. More news on the Mueller investigation, more stuff to talk about. But I want to give you a break to refill your coffee cup. And I got to get a coffee too. Michael Caputo for Still Standing. That's Still Standing Podcast. .com. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Michael Caputo. Welcome back. Thanks a lot for sticking around after the break. I really appreciate you tuning in. If you're interested in supporting us at patreon.com, look for Still Standing Podcast. And we'll have some new announcements about Still Standing Podcast soon as well. Big week. You know, I mentioned at the end of the last segment that Andrew Weissman of the Mueller investigation, the infamous Andrew Weissman, the Hillary-backing Andrew Weissman, the Andrew Weissman of the Department of Justice who attended Hillary Clinton's victory party, expecting to be escorted back in the back of the hall to congratulate the new president-elect Hillary Clinton, but was not. Andrew Weissman, the one who messaged Sally Yates when she defied the president as the acting attorney general and said, "You amaze me." Andrew Weissman, who clearly does not like Donald Trump, clearly loved Hillary Clinton, clearly had a hard-on for everyone, witness, target, subject alike in the Mueller investigation jackpot. He has decided to leave the investigation. How about that, right? Now, I'm not going to tell you anything that's secret. I really don't know why he did. People say it's an indication. All the headlines in the Mueller-loving media are saying this is an indication, yet another indication, that the Mueller investigation is going to be ended very soon and a report is due. But OAN, One American News, Jack Posobiec, who I've never met, but who I talk to frequently, good guy, looking forward to meeting him and his wife someday. He's reporting that he's got sources, apparently within the special counsel's office, that Weissman had presented to new Attorney General William Barr the idea of pushing toward more indictments. Posobiec mentioned that it was likely a Don Jr. and Jared Kushner indictments, but that Barr challenged him and said, "Look, tell me what you have. Tell me what you have to, you know, to rationalize this work, further investigation toward indictments." And Weissman failed to prove his premise. And so Barr said, "No, wrap it up. There's no more time, no more effort, no more searching, no more fishing, no more catching. This is over. There's no Russian collusion. Fold up your tent. Mr. Weissman, these are not appropriate actions." And told him no. And Weissman, as a result, is leaving, quitting. Not just quitting the Mueller investigation. He was chief counsel to the FBI, if I remember right. Most of these guys are on detail from other U.S. attorney offices, other FBI offices. They come from all over the country. Some come from private practice. Mueller himself comes from private practice. But old Andrew Weissman, he was over at the FBI, I believe, as the FBI chief counsel. Now, Weissman has a bad reputation among defendants' attorneys, among defense attorneys, who say that he manipulates the facts, hides exculpatory information, makes people spend time in jail when they shouldn't have to, and in fact was behind a disastrous prosecution of involving the Enron case, you know, executives caught up in the Enron case, where he destroyed the Anderson, or Arthur Anderson Company, where there were somewhere along the lines of thousands, 14,000 employees. The company had to close doors after senior executives were sent to jail. Everything was thrown out by the higher court, and Weissman was left holding that bag, destroying thousands of jobs, wasting years of people's lives in jail, and by the way, couldn't even make it stick. So Weissman has a bit of a reputation. Other people call him a bulldog. Some people think that he is, what was it that Steve Bannon called him? Something like the Wolverine of white collar crime or financial crimes, whatever. He's gone, out, exit. And he's even leaving government. He's going to the New York University. New York University, leaving government entirely. See, when the Mueller investigation shuts down, it's been said, and I believe it's true, that those who returned, for example, the guy who interrogated me, Aaron Zelinsky, came from the Baltimore office of the U.S. Attorney General, probably the Eastern District of Maryland, I guess that would be, and he will return to the Eastern District of Maryland. Others who came from other places throughout the DOJ and the FBI will be returning to the jobs that they had. They were on detail. So, frankly, those who were returned to private practice, Bob Mueller, others, I don't think that they're going to be continuing in their duties as prosecutors. For example, will Andrew Weissman have anything at all to do with the Mueller investigation from here forward? Do not know the answer to that. I do not know. I can tell you what my hopes are. I hope that Mr. Weissman, no, he's not gone yet, so I'm not going to exactly say what I hope for Mr. Weissman, what he and his cohorts have put my family through. I really don't wish on anyone. But yeah, he's on. He's gone. That's great. And also, by the way, I don't know if you heard about this, but in the House of Representatives, in an overwhelmingly bipartisan vote, the House 3 hours ago on Thursday, today, 4 hours ago, voted to demand public release of the Mueller report. Now, that's complicated. According to the legislation that guides, the law that guides the special counsel is not required to do so. The Department of Justice, the Attorney General, can decide, not Mueller. Now, if you remember the Ken Starr investigation, its final report came out in book form. People were lined up around the block for it when the trucks came from the government printing office. People were waiting on the loading dock for that report and just reading it voraciously. Not the same for the Mueller report. The law has changed since then. Not that anybody changed the law, but the part of the law that required the release of the Starr report, I believe, just expired. Nobody has changed it to require the release. And House Republicans joined Democrats today to overwhelmingly demand that the Department of Justice release to Congress and the public the full findings of the special counsel's investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 election and the possible involvement of President Trump's campaign. That was what the vote was about. A couple of things. First of all, you know, if you were caught up in this jackpot like I was, you've learned a lot about our justice system. First of all, I've learned that I've always spelled it incorrectly. I've always spelled it J-U-S-T-I-C-E. It is not one word, J-U-S-T-I-C-E. The Department of Justice is the Department of Just Us. That's two words, J-U-S-T Next word, U.S. The Department of Just Us. They are not there to prosecute people evenly. Henceforth, you understand why the news came out this week. More big news that really was kind of ignored by the mainstream media. Lisa Page's testimony came out, released by a Republican congressman, where she said, under oath, that the Department of Justice under Loretta Lynch ordered the FBI not to prosecute Hillary Clinton on her email scam, on her private email server in her bathroom, which exposed classified documents and broke public records law. And from that server, she destroyed at least 30,000 emails, many of those classified, proven to this day. She violated federal law. They were going to at least prosecute her for being sloppy. But the Department of Justice ruled that out, could not happen, ordered the FBI to stand down, according to Lisa Page, under oath. So you got to look at that. And look at Paul Manafort's sentencing under FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, that, as far as I know, has not been enforced as it has with Paul ever. If it has, it hasn't happened in decades, and certainly not in this criminal fashion. Paul was prosecuted criminally for not registering as a lobbyist for Ukraine, spending time in jail for that. I don't know of anybody who's ever been prosecuted under that law. It's always been kind of a guideline. Anybody who was busted in the past had to pay maybe maximum a fine, some kind of civil violation. They would have to register extemporaneously, which Paul Manafort did. And by the way, so did the other firms working on the contract with him, including Tony Podesta, a very close friend of Hillary Clinton's, multi-millionaire lobbyist who opened a lobbying shop with his other brother, Tony Podesta's brother. You know him well. The Podesta brothers really have a big stake in progressive America, the Hillary side, the Obama side. But so Tony Podesta was making millions off of the Ukrainian contract, did not register, and he was told at the same time Paul Manafort was, and he did the same thing Paul Manafort did. He went back and registered and just said, look, you know, this is for the registration I neglected to make in the past. And so did Mercury Public Affairs, a somewhat Republican PR firm, lobbying firm. But wait a minute. Tony Podesta hasn't been charged with anything, indicted for anything, prosecuted for anything, sentenced for anything, and he committed the exact same crime. So this is why we call it the Department of Just Us, right? If the Just Us Department was ordering the FBI to lay off Hillary Clinton, that meeting on the tarmac at the Phoenix airport between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch during the election, during the campaign, starts to look a lot more slimy. I always thought it was slimy. I always thought it was patently illegal. But they were just talking about, what, their grandkids and yoga. Loretta Lynch doesn't have any grandkids, and God forbid she does yoga. So now that meeting, which happened just before all this went down, when Hillary was exonerated of her crimes with classified materials, it all makes a lot of sense, a lot more sense. These meetings all happened right around the same time. The Department of Just Us. That's what this is all about. I'm telling you, when I think of the things I went through, the three different times I was interrogated by the House, the Senate, and the Mueller investigation, I am so glad I brought a pipe-swinging lawyer to the party. A pipe-swinging lawyer. Yeah, the former U.S. Attorney of the Western New York, former New York State Attorney General Dennis Vacco, and his firm Lippis Mathis are at my side no matter where I go. I would not have lunch in Washington with a Democrat without my attorney present. Not lunch. And mind you, I never dated Republicans. I only dated Democrats when I lived in Washington. That would make things really difficult. I wouldn't go to lunch with one of them today. Not one of them. Because they're there to set you up. The Department of Just Us set us all up, set up the country. And if you think I am going to testify before the House Judiciary Committee, Again, for the fourth time under oath, because Chairman Nadler, as you, if you listen to my podcast last week or you watch any of the news, Chairman Nadler has sent document requests to 81 of us. And when his assistant spoke to my attorney, they asked him to present me for voluntary interrogation or interview. My attorney said, why? He doesn't have any of the documents you want. He's testified three times under oath. Just go down the hall to House Intelligence and get a copy of it and read it. You're going to ask him the same questions. Every time I've been interviewed by the House, the Senate, and Mueller, they've asked me the same questions to a question. And each time it costs me half my salary. Half a year's salary. And then I hear, you know, as we're warming up for the release of the Mueller report, I watch as House Intelligence Chairman Schiff, who interviewed me, was in the room when I was in front of the House Intelligence Committee and has accused me of not being candid with his committee on national television. He wouldn't do that in the well of the House because that would be a lie. Honestly, though, I mean, Schiff was being interviewed, and he said, listen, the president needs to come and answer questions with the Mueller team, not just on paper. He needs to answer questions with Mueller. He's got a live tweet it, whatever. This is not going to be a real report unless the president answers questions without an attorney present. Not written questions. What he says are lawyered, as if he, a lawyer, doesn't know what that means. Schiff has said that if the House does not get a full copy of the Mueller report, he is going to restart the entire Mueller investigation. Let me put that right past you again. He is going to restart the entire Mueller investigation at the House Intelligence Committee if he does not get a copy of the report. Now, mind you, the House Judiciary Committee has already sent out letters indicating that they're restarting the entire Mueller investigation. I was in Washington for years. I worked with seven different House committees. I'm telling you the following, and take it to the bank. The Mueller investigation, I met many of them. I sat down in front of them. It's no fun. They're very, very thorough. And if you look at the names on that list and you see what they have done and you understand Mueller's reputation and that heinous Weissman, what his reputation is, this is probably the most impressive array of investigators we have put together in the United States government to look at anything since the millennium. I would say these investigators were stronger than the 9/11 Commission. They had the entire budget of the United States at their fingertips. They had a blank check to go after everything. It wasn't a limited instruction memo. They said Russian collusion, any indications of Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government, and anywhere else, anywhere on the planet where this investigation leads, you have a responsibility to report upon. They have done it. They have found no collusion. If there would be some indication of Trump campaign collusion, it would have been leaked by now. And we expect the report any day. And the House, at two committees, wants to start this all over again. Let me make a second thing clear. The House is not going to find anything that this impressive array of investigative talent did not find, number one. And number two, there is a reason why two committees are doing this. Not one, two. Russian collusion is being done, and they're talking about opening the whole thing back up again and interviewing everybody who was ever interviewed before. And more, for a reason. Because the resistance, which is coordinating all this, and if you don't think that this is being coordinated by a group of people who are behind all of this resistance, all of the investigations, everything at the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all the Brennan, Clapper, NSA, all these guys who were working for Barack Obama were trying to stop Donald Trump. They weaponized the entire national security apparatus of the White House to figure out Donald Trump and try to prove some kind of bogus Russian collusion to stop him from being president of the United States, and failed. Failed. Absolutely failed. Now, the House is going to keep it going. And I'm telling you, they have already destroyed me financially. My family has had our lives on hold for 2 years while three different investigations looked under our hood. And now they want to look under my hood again? I don't think so. They want documents? I'll give them documents. Not a problem. I already responded. I don't have them. No documents. You want me to testify before your committee? I don't think I'm going to do it. I'm not going to say categorically no. But if this is all about the things that I've already discussed, and that's exactly what it is, I'm not interested in coming in to testify again. Go down the hall and find the testimony that I gave to your compatriot House committee and read it. I'm not allowed to have it. I don't have it, or I'd give it to you. When I go and review it in the House Representatives Intelligence Committee's SCIF, in their super secret room, I review it. I'm not allowed to take notes. I went in there and reviewed it twice. The second time I went in there, I was memorizing things, and I have been to 427 Grateful Dead shows, ladies and gentlemen. I do not have that kind of memory. It was awfully difficult to walk out and take notes outside after I'd sat there and reviewed it. They don't let you even take notes. But the chairman of these committees, Schiff and their staff, and Nadler and his staff, they absolutely can go down to the House Intelligence Committee and say, hey, can we sit on down? They can take notes. Why don't they? I'll tell you why. Because they want to ruin me financially. They want to ruin all 80 of those people and more financially, because this is about, this is about ruining Donald Trump, ruining his family, ruining his businesses, ruining all of his friends, which is where I find myself. Because this cannot happen again. No billionaire CEO can wake up in the morning one day and say, honey, to his wife, honey, my country's broken and only I can fix it. I'm going to run for president. His wife must say, are you kidding? Do you see what they did to Donald Trump, his family, his businesses, his friends? That's what this is about. And I am unwilling to put my family through it anymore. You call me in. It looks like my attorney and I, we're going to take the fifth. Five, baby. The big five. I'm finished with it. I'm not playing. Because this is about trying to create another Michael Cohen. Mark my words. Create another Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, who is a liar, an insidious liar. I've known him for several years. He is a categorical, habitual liar. He got caught up in perjury or a 1001 charge, lying to the FBI is like a 1001 charge. And they said, okay, you're going to jail for this unless you say some things we need said about Donald Trump. So he agreed to lie about the president. That's how they create a Michael Cohen. Not too difficult when you're interviewing a pathological liar like Michael Cohen, but they're going to find another Michael Cohen somewhere in this 81 and make that person say something that's not true about the president and pursue impeachment. That's what this is about. Destroying the president. Impeachment. I'm not playing. You've got my testimony. Read it. Michael Caputo for Still Standing. Thanks a lot for hanging around. I really appreciate it. StillStandingPodcast.com. Have a great week. I know I am, because my family, we're pressing play.